The last case of the morning is number 043562, Paula Johnson against Leland Cherry, the appeal of Barbara J. Clenty.
May it please the court, I'm Barbara J. Kleinite, and I'm here to argue today on my own behalf, which is unusual. I'm appealing sanctions that were entered against me by Judge Herndon, and primarily they were based upon a finding by the judge that I lied to the court when I claimed my signature on two motions to withdraw had been forged by photocopying my signature from one document and inserting it on there.
Before you go any further, I would just like to say that we stood at windows, and there is no doubt in my mind that someone has cut and pasted your signature. When you compare the signatures, it's the same signature.
I suppose I should take a moment to address the retaining lien argument. I don't know if the court has any questions on that.
Well, before you get to that,
sure.
Though, I mean, I think the thing that I guess concerns me about this case is obvious that the district judge knew that something had gone awry, and who was responsible for it was clearly what he wanted to explore. But I have this tremendous feeling that there's just not enough information in this record. I think that you argue in your brief that there should have been a much more formal order to show cause that would have laid out exactly what the judge's concerns were so that an appropriate response could have been made, because I guess this gets wound up in the other aspect of the sanction that you're not talking about here, which is the use of the electronic
yes.
signature facilities.
I did not
appeal and so
that.
The judge might have been wondering whether you had something to do with the fact that your signature appeared on both of those, even though it is obvious. I mean, it certainly looks cut and paste to me too, but who's behind it? And your procedural argument is that this never got fleshed out in a proper hearing.
Well, I was taken by surprise at the hearing on the rule to show cause that the judge entered requiring the people responsible for the forgery to respond. Based upon his order requiring the people responsible for the forgery to respond, I didn't consider it directed against me. Then at the hearing, he came out with the conclusion that he felt I had signed those documents.
This is the August 31st
yes.
hearing you were talking about? Yeah.
And at that point, that's the first time I knew that my conduct might be in question. And I feel that under Rule 11, he was obligated at that point to do a rule to show cause order against me and give me an opportunity to make any corrections that needed to be made to explain the conduct that was involved further so that he could understand better the I don't feel there was a relationship between the electronic filing problem and the forgery.
I'm interested
yes.
in what you would have said in response to that, because I understood from your brief that you were willing to concede that you had, in fact, violated this
yes.
rule about the electronic filing, but perhaps you can explain a little bit more about what
sure.
you would have done with this kind of opportunity.
I was really puzzled with the judge's ruling, and as far as I can figure it out, I think he based it on a decision I was not credible. And I think he based it primarily on two things. One was the letter I hadn't refreshed my memory with, and I had said in my response I had never told Paula Johnson how to do an electronic signature. And I had totally forgotten in another case I had sent her a letter to that effect. If I had known about that, I would have explained that to the court, and perhaps my credibility would have been rehabilitated. The other thing he mentioned in the report of proceedings, page 35, I cited a case in support of my retaining lien, the Browery case, which is 527 F. 2nd, 799, for the proposition that the federal court recognized my retaining lien. He said he read the case and it did not support the proposition, and I think he concluded, therefore, I had also made a misstatement there. I would have explained to him with a direct quote from the case that I had almost exactly paraphrased what the case said. And had he been aware that he was mistaken about the case and that it was a correct site for that proposition, perhaps then he wouldn't have questioned my credibility to that extent. I think the credibility issue was hurt by those two things. I think he was distressed at what happened with the electronic filing, and I think he was perhaps influenced to some extent about that. But I don't think that alone would have turned the tide.
Can I ask you two other things? One is whether there is actually anything left to this retaining lien issue. Have you, in fact, turned the files over pursuant to his order?
I have not. Judge Herndon entered a rule to show cause order. I filed a response to the rule to show cause, which is in the record, and he then stayed ruling pending the disposition of the appeal.
All right, okay, so that's still alive.
Yes.
The other thing that's very odd about this case, and probably suits you in some ways fine, but it's odd from the outside, is that if he really thought that you had deliberately lied to the court, it's an astonishingly mild sanction.
Yes.
I mean, it makes you wonder what he thought. $500 and giving you a new password for the electronic filing system? Is that right?
He fined me $500 for the e-filing offense and $500 for lying to the court, for a total of $1,000. But the damage goes beyond the fine.
We don't have a brief from Ms. Johnson in this appeal, and when I looked at the docket, I saw that she twice asked for leave.
Yes, she did.
To file a brief. Both times our motions panel denied it. Because we were under the impression that she, you know, isn't a party to the appeal.
Right.
Do you think we were mistaken in that respect?
It disturbed me a while, but then I think since everything is based upon the record and what the judge did was based upon the record, she wouldn't have been allowed to add anything to the record. I don't think... I don't know that she's a party to the appeal. She's an interested person, certainly. I really don't know that she's a party to the appeal. I put her down on the cover as an appellee because I thought perhaps she might be. Whether or not she has a right to present argument to the court, I couldn't find anything on that. And I'm sorry, I can't enlighten the court as to any case law on that. I don't think it would disturb me except for the fact that if I didn't sign the document, obviously she's guilty of forgery, and so she has a criminal interest at stake. I felt a little sad for her that she didn't get to file her brief. But on the other hand, I looked at the brief, and I would have moved to strike it as being improper.
With respect back to the retaining lien, just
sure.
for a moment, what is the amount of fees and expenses that you believe she owes you?
Well, in this particular case, I think the expenses were roughly $2,100. I had four cases, and it's hard for me to remember separately. The fees were probably about $9,000.
Do you practice frequently in the Southern District?
I have for the last about 5 years since I won a big case down there. My name got around. And I've enjoyed it so much that I continue to take cases in the Southern District. If I could, on the retaining lien, the one thing I did want to stress, I think Judge Herndon focused on the fact that this might prejudice the plaintiff in proceeding with her lawsuit. And I can certainly understand the court wanting to proceed. But the Illinois cases I cite in my brief do recognize that the whole value of the lien is the leverage the attorney has by retaining the file and inconveniencing the client. Without that, there's really no leverage to get the payment of the expenses and the costs.
Well, and it's really just payment or bond,
security.
Basically. Some sort of security.
Actually, when Mr. Hamill and I talked, we were getting along quite well. He had already agreed to pay my expenses and negotiate about the fee. And it didn't seem like there was going to be any problem. The expenses weren't that high. And with the fee, I was willing to wait. You know, I was willing to agree to wait till the end of the case and be accommodated at that time in some way.
You never filed a motion to reconsider or a Rule 59E. with Judge Herndon, did you?
No, I did not.
Yeah. You know, I know that you made the argument that someone might have cut and pasted your signature in your response to the rule to show cause. But
yes.
Did you make that argument originally in the, you know...
In my original
yeah.
response,
uh-huh.
yes. Well, there were two rule to show causes. I filed a response to the original rule to show cause directed against the people who supposedly forged the name. Even though I didn't feel I was... it was directed at me, I felt that I needed to support myself with additional uh-huh. evidence. But I even mentioned, I believe, in my motion to strike document 17, which was the original motion to withdraw. I filed a motion to strike that document as being unauthorized because my signature had been forged by copying it from another document. I also clarified further in my response to the second rule that I had located the document from which it had been photocopied. That did not appear in the original response. And I think that is the primary thing that was added in the response to the rule to show cause. If there's nothing further, I thank the court.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
We'll take the case under advisement. We have finished the call of the day, and therefore the court will rise until 9:30 tomorrow.